This is a cue you didn't hear in Star Wars Battlefront 2, but if you stick around, you can listen to all of this exclusive track. This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Gordy Hebb, and it's really fun to have a chance to talk with you again. This time we'll be talking about Star Wars Battlefront 2. So, hi, it's great to talk with you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, there's been a lot of changes between Star Wars Battlefront and this one, so we've got a lot to talk about. But, I mean, right off the bat, was there any doubt that you wouldn't get the project? I mean, you'd be the obvious choice for me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always a bit of doubt. They brought in two additional studios to help create Battlefront 2. So Battlefront 1 was DICE, who developed the game. And this time around, they brought in, it's DICE as well, but also a studio called Motive and Criterion. And so that, of course, introduced two new teams worth of people that were making decisions on who would write the music. So, you know, of course, there was a little bit of, not concern, but uncertainty on my end. But fortunately, they heard what I had done on Battlefront 1 and agreed it was a good choice to bring me back on.
Well, so. Of course. I mean, I don't know anybody who's sort of gotten inside John Williams' music better than you have. I mean, at this point, you'd mentioned that it was kind of like learning to speak in another language, comparing it to French, maybe. But at this point, you've assimilated his music so completely that the thing that really struck me listening to it is these themes sound like I've heard them before, even though I haven't. They're that close to the music of John Williams, which is just...
That's great.
It's just an incredible achievement, really.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
This is a game on such a much bigger scale. There's, you know, the multiplayer combat, but then there's also the single-player campaign. And I think what makes that so interesting is that there's this new character, Iden Versio. And you've mentioned that being able to write her theme... It has been like a real thrill for you.
Yeah, it was actually really great because this new character, Iden, is officially part of Star Wars canon. And knowing that was, just, you know, it made it a really cool opportunity to sort of put my own stamp on the canon beyond, you know, just writing action music that serves sort of a singular purpose in the game. Here's an opportunity to write music that's much more narrative and, you know, emotional or emotion driven, at least, and follows the storylines, much like writing a score for a film. So I saw it as a really cool opportunity to sort of come up with new themes, have them weave in and out of the score that I was creating for the game and you know, sort of put a stamp on the canon.
Yeah. How fleshed out a character was she when you were brought in to start working on the music?
You know, the character itself was very fleshed out. I mean, I read scripts and I saw, you know, sort of still images or concept art. So I at least knew quite a bit about what her character was to be like. I didn't have in the very beginning stages of it any footage or cutscene cinematics or anything of that sort as of yet, but I had enough to go off of to understand where her character lies in the storyline and really understand her story arc. So it gave me enough to go off of to at least create a theme that I felt could sort of translate itself into many different emotional components. And then once I had cutscenes and cinematics, I was able to, you know, use that theme to score to picture.
Yeah. And that must have been a nice kind of a finally, now I can
get
going.
Exactly.
What was the experimentation process like before you finally got that? Aha, this is the theme that's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that was one of the trickiest parts of writing the score, actually, was coming up with her theme because the audio lead at Motive, who was sort of guiding me with her character, you know, had a lot of ideas about what the music theme should be like, at least not what it is, but, you know, what purpose it needs to serve. And so there was quite a bit of back and forth between us, you know, trying to find the perfect theme. And it's a challenge because, I mean, what we're after is something that is instantly recognizable and memorable, but also serves an emotional purpose for the character. And this is something that John Williams obviously does extremely well. But, you know, one thing that plays to his advantage, I think, in the cases of his themes is that, you know, these are films that we've seen hundreds of times. And, you know, if you, for example, if you were to take the Imperial March, you know, what's now been, you know, I guess universally recognized as Darth Vader's theme. We all know that theme. It's memorable, but it's memorable not only because it's a good theme and it's, you know, well-written and interesting and simple enough to latch onto, but because we probably heard it, you know, I don't know, 40 times in the movie Empire Strikes Back, and then however many iterations after that and subsequent films. So it's been ingrained into our minds. So that's the tricky part when you're dealing with something completely brand new. To make it instantly recognizable is hard because we haven't heard it yet. So I needed to make sure it was something that could hold up to multiple iterations of the game so that it was able to, so I could use it multiple times, so it's, yeah, I'm sort of like throwing it at you often so it can sink in and become somewhat of an earworm, I guess.
Yeah. And how do you know when you've like finally got it? Do you hear it in your head when you're away from the piano, like when you're Trader yeah. Joe's or something? It's like still in your head? And
yep. I mean, that's usually the litmus test is, you know, if I'm working on it and I step away from the studio and the next morning I wake up and I'm still singing it in my head, you know, or if I'm, you know, out taking a jog or something like that and it's still stuck in my head. I mean, that's usually, for me at least, a good sign that I'm on to something. And then the real test is to see if that works for other people. And in this case, working with the audio lead at Motive, he had the same experience. So he was, you know, once he heard the sort of final iteration of the theme, he said, you know, it was a week before he could get that out of his head, before we could move on to something else. And that was sort of our final test. It's like, okay, this thing sticks.
Yeah.
So let's go with it.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
She's such an interesting character, and without giving too many spoilers away, she has a really interesting story arc, and you've managed in the 20 seconds of the theme, I think this is incredible, to just lay all of that out, because she starts out as a member of the Republic. She fights for the Empire and then has this incredible transition, and I think it's just remarkable that you were accomplishing that in like 20 seconds.
So. Yeah. I mean, the trick was, I knew that her character was very dynamic and that she had this very large story arc. So I wanted something that could easily translate to different types of emotions. So the same theme could work in the beginning of her arc and work equally well at the end of her arc. And I thought maybe the way to accomplish this is for the theme itself to have a very similar arc in and of itself. So that was sort of my approach. You know, I wanted something that was sort of dark and imperial, you know, if you want to call it that, you know, like in a minor key, but has sort of an ascending, upward reaching shape to the melody, so that it's aiming towards this more heroic end point. And so even within the 10 seconds of this little theme, it starts on this low note and it sort of climbs its way up. And, you know, following, you know, a very shortened version of her arc as a character.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of worked really well. You know, there's actually other characters in the single player. For instance, her father, Garrick Versio, who has a very opposite story arc where he's very grounded and static and set in his ways. And so actually his theme is almost a mirror image of Iden's theme. It's the exact same rhythm, except for instead it descends and lands on sort of a low final, you know, sort of resting note, kind of giving the impression of somebody that's, you know, very set in its ways and isn't going to change and I guess a bit stubborn, if you will.
Yeah, that is so cool. And I think it's really neat that you mentioned that you do your composing sitting at the piano with staff paper. And so as you're working out these themes, you have an opportunity to kind of layer one over the other to kind of figure out how they're going to work out together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess I'm a bit old-fashioned in that sense, but I actually sort of adopted that method of working when I first started working on Star Wars video game projects, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 years ago, I guess, whenever the Old Republic was. That was the first Star Wars game I worked on. And, you know, my thought process was that I could get closer to it fitting into that universe if I adopted the same method that John Williams uses to write, which is he writes with a pencil and paper at the piano. So I chose to do that, and I feel like working that way sort of allows me to get away from a trial and error method of writing, where I could play it into my, you know, sequencer in my studio and hear it back instantly. Doing this sort of forces me to hear the entire thing in my head first. And for some reason, that allows me to be a bit craftier. I think the end result is more crafty. So it just kind of works for me.
That is so cool. I read somewhere that Chopin, you know, he'd sit at the piano and improvise, and then he had such a hard time getting what he had just played down on paper.
Yeah.
Because it went by so fast. Does that ever happen to you?
Yeah, exactly. That, for me, that doesn't happen because I'm an absolutely awful piano player. So the piano is just a tool to get, you know, some notes out, you know, to make sure what I'm hearing in my head is exactly what works in the real world and still works in the real world, I suppose. So, you know, I could actually, and probably I'd say 75% of the time when I'm writing, I barely even touch the piano. I'm just writing pencil to paper from what I hear in my head. But on the occasion, I need to sort of check a chord and make sure the chord works with the melody I'm writing. You know, as a simple example, I'll use the piano just to sort of find that and make sure it's exactly what I was hearing.
Wow.
So.
That is very cool. I have visions. I hope your penmanship is better than Beethoven's, because
probably not. Honestly, it's for me only. No, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, I've been lucky enough to get a really special track from you, the Combat Suite, and I would love to just dive in and talk about that, because there's a lot going on. There's really a lot to unpack there. Is this a montage of little bits of the combat music from the game?
It is. It's sort of a montage of what I personally think are some of the best battle music moments, but more so because it includes all of the main themes from the game that I composed. So it features Iden's theme as an example. It features the original Battlefront theme that I'd written for Battlefront 1. It features the Imperial theme that I'd written for Battlefront 1, and kind of weaves all of these themes in, you know, in and out of each other, but in the context of sort of a exciting battle cue, music cue. So I thought it was a cool example for that purpose, because it's melodic and also kind of exciting and, you know, over the top. A lot of fun.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. It's more than kind of exciting. And you've even got the chorus in there. And it's just it really is like a hold on to your hat, really super intense 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's definitely my favorite sort of 5 minutes of the score. And even some of the stuff that's in there, for various reasons, didn't make it in game. So it's you know, very exclusive in the sense that it actually includes music that wasn't heard.
Wow. I'm curious about how you work with the other composers, that the composers and the orchestrators and the people that were helping you get this music ready to record with the orchestra and chorus. So what was your relationship with them?
I'm sort of the spearhead, I guess. You know, I orchestrate my own music, which I guess is, you know, somewhat rare in today's, you know, composing world. So the guys that were working with me, their roles were primarily to help me create synthesized mock-ups of the music that I was writing and orchestrating so that I could play this music for the guys at DICE or Motive or Criterion so they could hear what I was thinking and sign off and approve it. And then the music would then pass through Lucasfilm and Disney, and then finally the last stage of sort of the approval processes for John Williams to actually listen to these mock-ups and sign off and say, yes, it fits the Star Wars canon well.
Wow.
In his opinion. And then at that point, then I would take it back and orchestrate. You know, I have a lot of orchestration shortcuts. So I have an assistant that works with me really closely. So he's learned to understand my orchestration shortcuts. So he can take those and then put them in a notation software so we can then pass it off to a music copyist who takes these scores and creates parts for every individual in the orchestra.
Wow. Does it affect how you compose knowing that the London Symphony Orchestra and the London Voices are going to be performing your music? Does that give you a chance to really like feel like you can open up the throttle a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, knowing that that's the group I'm dealing with in a lot of ways means that I can do pretty much anything I want, because they're capable. And I've now, having worked with that particular orchestra quite a few times over the past 4 or 5 years, I've gotten to know individual players and their capabilities as well. So when I'm writing, I'm thinking of the individual. And so that's a really, you know, good asset for my process, knowing exactly who it is that's going to play this particular part. You know, if an example, I know that, you know, the principal trumpet player can play up to a certain high note really comfortably. So I can stretch his limits and, you know, write higher parts or that kind of thing. And, you know, I know that the principal clarinetist has great virtuosic facility. So I'll write clarinet solos that move all over the instrument. And I know that he can handle it well. And so I'm kind of writing to the player in a lot of cases, you know, that, and they're capable of so much. So, you know, I know I can get away with some really difficult music that probably wouldn't otherwise come off quite as well with a different orchestra.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, does it ever get old, you know, hearing them play the music that you've written, whether you're on the podium or in the studio?
Never gets old. that is for a composer, and in my case, very much so, the reward, the reason I'm doing what I'm doing. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, what keeps me up at 4 a.m. after I've already been working for 15 straight hours writing something is knowing I get to hear this eventually. Yeah. And, you know, that's sort of my driving motivation.
Wow. Yeah, I bet that's got to be, I would imagine, just the most incredible feeling to have that
it
orchestra.
Really is.
Yeah. You put together a really interesting shopping list when you were in London of instruments, taiko drums and a Mahler hammer. And I had completely forgotten about these, but why did you include it?
For fun. I'm always trying to sort of push the envelope a bit with what I add to the, you know, the musical canon, I guess. And also, you know, it's always fun for a couple reasons to stretch the orchestra out and add new things. One reason is it just, you know, it heightens, it takes the music that I've done before to a new level. But also because, you know, I have all of the producers and, you know, audio directors from all of these companies there. And I want to show them something new and something exciting each time. So I've always made an effort to add some element that's new from the time before, just to sort of latch onto and, you know, introduce something that's new and cool. And this Mahler hammer was a really cool idea that that actually I can't fully take credit for. My assistant Marco, I was telling him I wanted this one particular part while I'm orchestrating to have almost the sound of a cannon. And I was thinking, well, let's use a really giant bass drum. And if I add that with the sound of like the sharpness of a taiko drum combined, it might have this cannon-like sound. He's like, well, what about a Mahler hammer? And I was like, oh, I never would have thought of that. And so we hunted around London and found this amazing Mahler hammer that we could rent and brought it into the studio. And, you know, the first thing I did when we got there is go out there and just take a look at it and see if it made the sound I hoped it would make. And the percussionist said, well, here's the hammer, hit it. And I hit it, and it was deafening. I mean, I literally had ears ringing. And in one of the largest studios that can absorb sound like that in the world, every person in the room stood up and turned. So it was it got the exact impact I was hoping for.
It's just an incredible thing. I'd kind of forgotten about it, too. My Mahler didn't even use it all that often in his symphonies, but it looks like a cartoon hammer. It's just so big.
It is. Yeah. It's like the hammer of Thor.
Yeah,
hitting
pretty much
a giant box that sounds like a cannon exploding in a recording studio. It was pretty fascinating.
Yeah. So how did you implement it then are there places in the score, like when we're playing the game, that you'd be able to hear it?
Yeah, actually, in the battle music montage that you're featuring, it's featured in there as well. And I think at the very end, you hear a big smack at the end. That's the Mahler hammer.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
And you know, I it just adds an extra level of excitement to the point of the percussion section. So I think it's a really cool, you know, sort of a thing you have to use with a high level of taste. You wouldn't want to have it all over the place. I think we had, in the score in total, maybe it was hit 3 times out of 150 minutes of music. But that was sort of, in my mind, the perfect amount. Any more would have been too much.
Yeah. It's always good to show restraint. And
yeah, exactly.
So I'm really curious, because I don't think to ask this very often with the people that I talk about, but what happens after all the music is recorded and you've got all this material to use? How do you start arranging it or breaking it apart or deciding how it's going to be implemented in the game?
Right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of how it's going to be implemented in the game is decided pretty well in advance of me even writing it. So it's already pretty much predetermined how it's going to be put into the game. You know, once it's all recorded, and we usually try to record it in those chunks exactly as they will be purposed. So once the recording's done, I take it back to Los Angeles and I work with this mixing engineer, Steve Kaplan. And he takes all of the recordings from Abbey Road, sorts it all out, chooses all the best takes based on notes that myself and my assistants take while we're at the session, and puts it all in order and then does a mix and then delivers each of these chunks independently as it was sort of predetermined prior to even writing it. So it's pretty well set in advance. But then additionally, I'm always thinking ahead to something like this track that you're featuring, creating a longer form piece of music. So even though that piece of music might be, you know, sort of built from 10 to 15 smaller pieces that, you know, have very individual purposes in the game, I'm still thinking, how could I create out of those pieces a longer form piece of music? And so this is in my mind while I'm writing as well. So I'm trying to write sort of a longer form thing that I can then separate out into individual sections to sort of serve the purpose technically in the game.
Yeah. And hearing this extended suite just makes me wonder if there's going to be a soundtrack at some point.
That's a good question that I don't know the answer to. And I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
That's something I get asked pretty often, even since Battlefront 1. It seems that there's definitely a desire out there for this music to be available in some more commercial form. And certainly when I'm writing it, I'm thinking that way as well.
Yeah.
You know, sort of, as I mentioned, I'm thinking of writing music that can live, you know, that serves its purpose in the game, but can also live on its own as music.
Yeah.
And so it was conceived that way. And I have sort of a prototype soundtrack already put together. And now I'm just hopeful.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. I mean, we'll just wait in anticipation, I guess, that
fingers
that's going to happen. Yeah. So if someone wants to get in touch with you, you're on Facebook and Twitter?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and Twitter. It's just my name, Gordy Haab, G-O-R-D-Y-H-A-A-B. So it's at Gordy Haab on Twitter, and then Facebook is just Gordy Haab. And you can also find me and more info about me and some music on my website, which is GordyHaab.com.
Well, I can tell that writing the theme for Iden Versio has been like a really wonderful accomplishment for you. Is there anything else that came out of this score that you'd like to mention or that you're like especially proud of or you really love players to notice?
Yeah, I mean, really for me, it's not just Iden's theme, but I mean, in the music for the single player in particular, I'm extremely proud of because it was highly dramatic and emotional narrative scoring like a film. So the music in a way tells the story. And I think that was a really cool thing to be a part of and a great accomplishment on my end. I was very happy with it. And particularly the way all of the individual character themes, Iden's, but also Hask's theme and Garrick's theme and how they all intertwine and complement each other and build something that's greater than the sum of its parts, I guess.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's just an incredible accomplishment. And
thank you.
Gordy, thank you so much for taking some time to help us like get inside and really look under the hood at how you accomplished it.
Oh, my pleasure. It's great. Thank you.